Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome back to another episode of the Dr. Supercoach podcast, the final episode for season 2021, reviewing and recapping the season that was from the three podcasters this year. Before we crack in and introduce our guests, who you already know, I'm just plugging Dr. Supercoach, which is us, for 173,000 plays on our 36 podcasts this season, this year, so over the last 12 months. That is plus 13% from our prior 12 months and approximately 5,000 listens per episode. So I just want to say before I do any introductions, a huge thank you to the community and everyone listening for supporting us so well this year. We're very, very grateful to have you guys tuning in each week. So with that said, I have the first guest of the week is Pistol. Hi.
I'm feeling excited. I'm not used to having both of you on the one podcast. There's a lot
Whoa,
of energy.
Spoilers.
You said the podcasters, like well, plural. Unless it's you and me.
Just me, you and me. Yeah,
that's true. My bad. I've ruined this. Start again.
Okay. Well, yeah. Our other guest is obviously Chizo. I actually should introduce you correctly. The famous Chizo of 2021. How are you?
I'm well, thanks, mate. How are you?
Can you just give us a little crack at why you're famous this year?
I just had a good season. Finished in okay. in the top 10. Pretty happy about it. All the excitement has kind of died down. We're back to normal life. I still have to mow the lawn and clean the kitchen and a bit dirty about that, but life goes on.
I mean, you've got some prize money. Maybe get some landscapers in.
Oh, what a good segue.
No segues this podcast. Okay.
Just opened the door for that. That was a wide open shot. The goalie had pulled a hamstring and all I had to do was just tap it in. I Terry toe poked it.
We might get to that later, so Pistol, just stay tuned.
I'm on it.
Firstly, the prize league has wrapped up, Chizo. Do you want to give us the information on the final winner of 2021?
So once again, I was going into calculating the numbers and I thought, I'm a real shot here. And because by alphabetical order, I calculate my numbers earlier on. So I'm leading for quite a long time. Third place this month was Chizo. A full 120 points behind Wazman, who was in second.
Wazman, wow.
And first this month, for the month of August, is LaMarcus taking home the Dr. Supercoach mug for the most points in prize league.
Wow.
A couple of Patreons that were definitely around. I mean, sometimes the ones who don't chat much in Patreon are the winners, and we're sort of like, yeah, you know, we're so happy. But the guys who are active, it's always good to see them win prizes. So two active members and yourself, Chizo, not so active.
Yeah, not. I'm busy studying, you see. That's what gets you a top 10 finish, mate. And obviously, the Lucky Door prize this month goes to Webdog. So congrats, Webdog.
Well done, Webdog.
I mean,
he doesn't drink beer, though. He's a very fitness-orientated bloke. He'll have to have his protein shake in it.
I think you'd refute some of that. But it could be used for soft drink as well, maybe. Or water in a can. I don't know what he gets into.
Water in a can. That is something I would love to see.
I think, but you not have it before. Somewhere. Like they have the fizzy carbonated...
I don't count that as water. Give me the fluoride.
It's literally water.
Yeah, I don't want the bubbles.
Okay, no, that's fair enough. Just drink lemonade, people. Okay. All right, so we also had a couple of other competitions wrap up. The Dr. Supercoach Cup was won by mystery member Chizo. It seems like you won a few of our prizes over the course of the season, Chizo, saving us a lot of money, I thought, until we had to ship out the prizes to you.
Genuinely saved us $400.
No, you won prizes. Eight head-to-head matches in a row is pretty impressive of increasing difficulty. And do you want to tell everyone what the score was in the grand final?
Yeah. So I'll do the bronze level medal match. Jay Fuller getting over Dimasty 26-14 to 23-48. But in the cup final, the gold medal match between Chizo and Kuva, it was 24-98 apiece. It was a draw. And based on our rules, based on our rules from earlier on in the cup, that if in the event of a draw, it's a higher ranked team. Kuvlaki Hutt is ranked 63rd in the world, and he loses to a higher ranked team. So that very disappointing for the poor.
I can't believe that. Amazing. That's a fairy tale finish. Like that is, you honestly could not script that any better. That will never happen again in the history of the Dr. Supercoach Cup.
I've gone from you saying it's a fairy tale that I win to saying that it's never going to happen again because I'm not going to win again. So 6-1, half dozen the other. You got my back or not?
Not. I think
Kuva knocked me out in the second round, so I was barracking for Kuva.
Wow, you got knocked out in the second round, dude.
That's, by Kuva.
Yeah, I mean, at least I made it to the Czech Snows second round. Chizo well represented us this year.
Yep.
And the winner of the LMS competition, the last man standing competition that we had run throughout the year, Jay Bizzle. So my burner account got up. Very good. That's my street name, Jay Bizzle. with that said, we're going to jump into the Cancer Council donations. Did we get anything for the last week of the season, Pistol? Very embarrassing if you didn't.
Surely we did.
No, we did. Dimasty has donated. He's saying he's donating for 2 donuts in round 22 and for 1 dumb thing. In the last round, he wanted to trade Stewart to Dawson, but missed Stewart's lockout. So he had to trade Lloyd to Maynard to avoid 3 donuts. That was in round 22, not round 23. Dawson and Lloyd the next week ended up combining for over 300, while instead he had Maynard and Briggs. So he lost a heck of a lot of points. So sorry to hear that, Dempsey.
And a cup got a bronze medal match as well.
So I didn't want to mention that, but yeah, we're up salt in the rooms. And we've...
He knocked me out, so...
We've got a final donation from MVP'd, now that I know how to say his team name, after his interview. He donated for his round 22 donut plus interests. So big thanks to 9th place overall MVP'd. That brings us to a overall total of $16,353 raised for the Cancer Council since we started, which is an unbelievable effort. Raised just over $3,300 this year, which is just our record as well. It was $3,268, I believe, before that. So, pipped it. So, again, thank you to everybody that donated along this season. Just goes to an absolutely incredible, you know, cause. And thanks so much for just the continued support the whole season.
Unreal.
And we should also give a shout out to the 4 top 10 coaches that helped us with letting us chew into their brain and how they went around 2021 in getting to their top 10 positions. Obviously, Supercoach Mama taking home first place, but also Lovsky, Josh, and MVP'd. So thanks for the four of you for sitting down and talking to us.
No, they don't deserve that second. Thank you. they got their whole podcast, their whole limelight. And I heard, actually, a source has told me that the eighth-ranked coach, not very happy that he didn't get his own podcast either.
Throwing a tantrum, I heard, was was the response.
Yeah, not good. Pistol, did you happen to catch any of the footy this weekend just gone?
I'm not falling for it this weekend, JB. This is definitely a segue to a Manscaped ad, and I will not fall face first into it for the sixth week in a row. Thank you very much.
I see you've learned. Finally.
I've learnt. It's not happening.
Well, I watched some footy. It was good. What about you, JB?
Yeah, no, I actually went to the footy.
Segue. Jesus Christ.
No, Pistol, I'm trying to talk, mate. Sorry. I went to both games.
Is that in Adelaide, hey?
This week?
Yeah.
Yeah, had an absolute ball.
Speaking of balls, JB, you can look after yours with the Performance Package 4.0 from Manscaped, thankfully sponsoring the Dr. Supercoach podcast for the last time in 2021. The Performance Package 4.0 by Manscaped has arrived, and I can say it's a fantastic upgrade. Inside the package, you'll get the Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, the Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, the Crop Preserver ball deodorant, Crop Reviver toner, performance boxer briefs, and a travel bag known as the Shed to hold all of your goodies. The fourth generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade technology to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin safe technology. The Lawnmower 4.0 has a 7,000 RPM motor with new multifunction on and off switch. Much more easy to work with there, JB. You can also turn the clutch LED light on and off depending on if you're working in bright or dim light, which is what you need to be optimized when you're looking after your Sharons. And if you thought that was good, you can take your grooming to even further a higher level. Get that, you know, super uber premium inside of your team. The Performance Package 4.0 also has the Weed Whacker, which looks after the nose and ears, which if you're at my age, JB, you do need some looking after. If you do want to support Dr. Supercoach podcast, you can use code DRSC for 20% off and free shipping at Manscaped. Thank you to Manscaped for sponsoring us once again. It's 20% off and free shipping using DRSC at manscaped.com.
Chizo, great read. Thank you for the segue. Another way you can sponsor us is by following our Patreon. So I've got a couple of statistics here I just want to rattle off for you. So we had six players involved in our Patreon rank inside the top 10 ranks for the entire season. 31 of the top 100, 97 of the top 400. Pistol Rep made me read that stat.
That's a good one.
157 of the top 1,000. Leagues wise, we had 7 of the top 10 to finish the league, to finish the year, 11 of the top 15, including the top 2 10 coach leagues, which don't actually count, guys, and the top 4 18 coach leagues. So essentially a Dr. Supercoach suite from what I can see, and I've been obliged by my lawyers to read out that two of the top of the three podcasters also finished within the top 100 for the season. So a great year all round by us. Pistol, I'm going to throw to you for a second. Patreon, high ranking numbers, what's the correlation here?
All right, I've got a theory. But just before I get to that, I do want to mention that the billing has been turned off for our patrons until next year. So you'll be able to not cancel your membership because you won't be charged. So just, don't stress out until, Supercoach opens. And then obviously there'll be more content and we'll, pop that billing back on. But for now, a couple of months free, good way to end the year, good way to get involved, say hi to people, blah, blah, blah. So jump in there. So I was thinking about what the biggest difference was between this year and previous years. Like, how did we do it? How is it possible that we had so many good ranks this year? Typically, all podcasts, all people are doing research. We have the same information as everybody else. So what is the, magic ingredient? Like, what happened? And I think the key really came down to the Doctor's Daily Dose podcasts. We did 30 episodes in the preseason across 30 days where we spoke approximately 20 minutes on individual players. We analyzed the premiums in such high detail, a level of detail that was not found anywhere else at all. And it became relatively clear to us, I guess, which premiums were worthwhile selections. We obviously didn't get all of them right, but I think we did a pretty good job. We got a very high percentage calls correct by going in such great detail into the premiums that we were able to get, you know, I guess a short list of, let's say, viable premium options to start the year. And I think what ended up happening was a lot of slack just mix and matched the viable list. I mean, we didn't have a physical list that we put out, but like they mix and match what they heard from the podcasts and came up kind of with what they valued as, you know, the pros. And they were able to use that extra detailed information to pick the right premiums to start the season. And then when the season went underway and all of our premiums got off to a flyer, meant we didn't really need to worry about, you know, a Cripps that was failing. Most of us avoided Neil that was struggling as well, and we didn't need to do these sideways trades at the beginning of the season, and those extra two trades were able to get us on other players much more quickly, which then caused a separation between perhaps our, you know, followers and potentially other people's followers who may have had some misses early on.
So at this point, we believe Doctor's Daily Dose will run again in 2022. I don't want to lock us into anything, but without having discussed it, I think the success of the product is going to run us into next year. And equally to the players that we endorsed or just discussed, and they came out with a glowing endorsement just based on their pros and cons and nothing really of our own advice. It also weeded out the guys who were popular in teams, in percentage of teams, but weren't actually good picks, like Tom Phillips, for example. We had, Cheese and I did about 13 seconds on that podcast and just said, don't do it. But I think,
Photoshop on that DDD too.
You did.
With
you
Luke did, Ryan. You definitely did.
Maybe, yeah. worth the price of admission alone. All right. Well, with that, all that said, we've done all our plugs. We've thrown up all the statistics from the year that has gone past us. Now, I'm going to do this little three-way interview and discuss our teams and our entire Supercoach season in 2021, just what we learned, just what we are going to take into next year, with a very sneaky sneak preview at next year and what we're early thinking on that one as well. So let's start off with the broadest of questions regarding our 2021 starting teams, regarding things that we learnt. Firstly, I'm going to throw to you, Chizo. You've got your starting team up there. You obviously had an immaculate year. You finished eighth. What are some things that you take away by looking at your team and remembering the thought process? And these can be positives or negatives.
It's always easy to look with hindsight goggles on, and when you have a good year, say that you're on the right track, or you had a bad year, this is what you would have changed. I think the thing that stands out for me is that I let the information point me in the right direction. I think I remember in the preseason, particularly on Twitter, we were copping a bit of heat about you can't possibly go this deep in defense, or how can you be a podcast out there recommending people go deep in this line compared to the other. I think the thing for me is what I tried very much to this year, and we'll probably get to it in some of my trades, is that I just took a step back, tried to stay as unbiased as possible, and just looked at the information at whole and said, where is it directing me? I tried not to have any personal input to get something out of it that I was looking for. I just let the information kind of wash over me and pick the best options from that, which led me to picking really heavy in defense. So I went short at D5. So I was really, really heavy.
Yeah.
And that's just literally, you know, one of the arguments we had in the preseason was defenders are going to score more than most of the other lines because of X, Y, and Z, and they take kickouts and whatever. But I pretty much am just looking for job security in the start of the year. And so what I was finding is that it was just better job security for rookies elsewhere in the ground, and that the defense just didn't have it there. And so you can't fight with the information that's available, and everything was just a big arrow pointing to, you just have to go heavy in defense. And when I saw people going into, you know, first lockout, and they had two mid prices at D4, D5, and then a rookie on field at D6, I was looking at it going, everything's telling me that that's a really bad choice.
Yeah, which it kind of did turn out to be. The short defense, we were struggling, I think, all season with rookies coming in and out of those positions. Harry Sharp only lasted two games. Cozzy was in and out of the team. Highmore was in and out of the team. And beyond that, there just weren't enough rookies to sort of keep us afloat. And, you know, we could trade in and out guys like Lockie Jones and try to plug holes, but he didn't last long in the team via injury as well. Pistol, having a look at your starting team there, what are your main takeaways from advice that you took or ignored in the preseason? What sort of got you the edge this year? Or maybe things that you did wrong in your starting team that you might not do next year?
Well, my structure was the same as Chizo's. I went five heavy in the back line as well. So Chizo and I identified the lack of rookies there and decided to just go all in on deep. I know every year you have to judge differently just because, you know, it's last year and the year before, like it was good to go shallow in premiums in the back line. Doesn't mean that this year was going to be the same. So that was something I was really happy with structure-wise. I think I made a couple of poor decisions in the final week after the final round of the preseason games. I think I was one of the latest people probably to remove Isaac Cumming from their side, and obviously that turned out really badly, and that was because you know, he looked poor in the preseason game. And I think in hindsight, if there's a rookie that's on every kick out, like he was on all of them, it just makes sense because of the floor, the high floor, to pick them. It's in hindsight, that's a really obvious pick. But I think the big one was I did a late change of removing Oliver to Kelly.
You still finished top 100, by the way.
No, it's upsetting just because every year I feel like I have this lesson that I should learn, and I'm not doing it. And I want to learn from my lessons from the previous season. And it's the players that play 22 games are so valuable. If they play every round, obviously not the bye, but if they play every round and score well, it saves trades. It saves you headaches. It's worth its weight in absolute gold. And for some reason, I got caught up in, you know, hype, and I love Josh Kelly, obviously, and I just saw him scoring, you know, 130 plus, whatever it might be, and was like, oh, well, Oliver will only just play every game and average like 114 or something, and that's, you know, what convinced me. But I hope next season I'm not saying the same thing at the end of 2022 and saying, why did I not pick players that I thought would just play 22 games? And I think going into next year, I'm going to be strongly looking at the players that are going to be playing 22 games, you know, consistent premiums. I think consistent premiums is the big one as well. Ones not volatile premiums, so ones that maintain a high price. I mean, McRae only dropped to 630K the whole season, and if I can pick as many midfielders that are not super volatile.
Just 20K below his starting point, by the way, which a lot of people early days identified as quote-unquote too expensive.
Yeah. I think you pay up for the big guns, the ones that have a really high floor, and you pick up players that have a low floor and you just buy them on the cheap. I mean, those players, I'm talking right now, I mean, we can get into it later, but I'm specifically talking about Bontempelli, who's putting out 80s and 150s. 150s feel awesome. Yep. That's 80s. I can pay for him 550K. That feels awesome. So,
and he did roller coaster a bit besides that purple patch where he stayed above 650 for about 7 weeks. But he had a couple of times early in the season, in the first month and a half, he was quite low. And then pretty much for the entire last 2 months, he was affordable. So,
yeah, it's definitely a lesson I'm going to take into next season, I think. And that's the biggest changes I would have made in my starting side. What about you, JB?
Yeah, so just quickly on mine, I did the same thing as you guys. After the first week of football, I was six at the back. My D6 was Jordan Clark. So I also went really strong. And I ended up ranking about 1,800, by the way, but I was in the first month and a half in the top 100. So I did still start well. I'm not just talking nonsense. But my starting team, yeah, I'm having a look at it now and not really identifying many chaos issues here. So I had a couple of bias picks, as I tend to do most years. I think I don't really identify myself as someone who's biased, but I think I should probably look into that. I still justified my decisions and found the data, not via confirmation bias, as in sourced the data that I wanted to see and ignored the rest, but Zach Butters was one of them who I think would have been a successful pick had he not gotten injured, but you could see as a bias pick. Dan Houston I started, who I could say again, had he not have gotten injured, might have been a successful pick, but is now firmly on the never again list. And Arazio, who started the season with a 94, by the way, which I tend to forget when I think back on him. He did the things that I wanted in the first couple of weeks and then really tapered off into a stay-at-home small forward, which is just not good and should have been predictable. So a little bit of bias in a few of my selections. But besides that, I really did nail a lot of my team. And looking back on it, I'm pretty happy with what I did. I guess in hindsight with me, it was more so the guys that I didn't consider as much as it was the guys that I did end up looking into and picking. So someone like Jared Lyons, as you said, Pistol, the underrated nature of consistency and playing every game of the season just went over my head a little bit with some of the players. And I can tell you right now, going into next year, it'll be a different outlook from me. In terms of scoping out the entire field, I also had Walsh for 90% of the preseason and didn't end up starting him in favour of Patrick Dangerfield, which is a real last-minute thing for me as well. So a couple of things I definitely could have done better and definitely should have considered when I didn't. But overall, I think the starting team was fairly strong thanks to, I think, the whole of Dr. Supercoach identifying early the defensive situation, how good the value forwards were with Jack Siebel, Jarman Impey. Warner was great earlier in the season as well. And, I mean, Rowe was fieldable for 1 week at least. and just, yeah, really rolling with that. I think we nailed that and, you know, that's good. So, Chiso, still going back to your starting team here, things that you... Can you identify things that you specifically did incorrectly that you would do differently next year?
I definitely got sucked into Jordan Clark. I think the preseason...
Ben Dow, I think, is another one for me.
Yeah, I think the preseason is really, really good in terms of solidifying things that we've already uncovered and, you know, already kind of have half an eye on doing. I think that, you know, we only really got one attempt to see each team. And when you only have one data point to go on, you have no real reference frame as to how spot on or how accurate that actually is.
Yep.
And, you know, so hindsight is 20/20, and so we really know that he was a bad selection, and there were multiple other ones that were in the price range that we could have gone with that, you know, would have finished I could have finished number one if I had not taken Clark, for example. So I definitely class that as a mistake. I definitely got sucked into the preseason hype. There are a few.
So what do you think actually sucked you in to deep dive a little bit further?
It was definitely the role. I mean, we'd had a few discussions in Slack with some Geelong supporters that were saying, you know, this is the year, this is the breakout year. And I was very much like, oh, I don't even know if he's best 22. Oh, no, he's definitely best 22. And then I saw that preseason game, and I can't remember what he had. He had 30 touches or something like that, and he was playing for three quarters.
30.
He is known to have a really good tank, and always kind of likened him to a, you know, like an Isaac Smith kind of heavy running, good disposal wing kind of player. So that kind of bias, when matched with his role in the preseason, I was like, oh, actually, there's something to this. And it's not like I was really toying with him so much. He would have been outside of the top five of the mid-priced or, you know, slightly elevated rookies that I was looking for in my back line. But when I saw that preseason game, the eye test just kind of sucked me straight in. And from that point, I was hooked. And then it's really easy to confirmation bias yourself into it. And you're just like, oh, well, if he's not any good, he's got DPP and that's going to help me cover donuts or something. And he absolutely did on occasions. But in the occasions that I actually needed him to play and I had 250K, it wasn't his purpose. And then I was using the DPP to get him off field on most weeks rather than he was filling in for rookies that were having lower job security than we thought. So definitely a fail in terms of a starting selection for me. And the thing that I'm going to take away from it is I'm not just going to be jumping on anyone that wasn't actually on my radar. Because I feel at this point I've got a pretty decent Supercoach fantasy radar that going into next year, I don't think there's going to be like a third or fourth or fifth year breakout that I'm like, oh, who's this guy? We should totally get on him. I feel like I'm around most of these players right now. So if someone comes out with a really good preseason game, I'm like, yep, okay, I was expecting that. This is what I was looking for. Or, you know, maybe that's an aberration. I don't think he's actually got the chops to do it long term. And that's probably something I'm going to take away from it. It's just kind of not get sucked into it too as much because I was still only 50-50 on him, but I just went with his preseason form as opposed to what my instincts were telling me that he might not be the great selection.
So, Pistol.
Yes.
A popular, well, I don't know how popular this is. I've heard it spoken about in a lot of FPL corners, Fantasy Premier League, is that it's not the upside for being the first person on a breakout or the first person on someone who is, you know, priced low or a lower premium or something like that. Being the first person on that before everyone flocks to that player isn't as beneficial as you think, whereas being the first person on someone who fails is actually a super harmful thing to your team. Can that be adopted in Supercoach? Should we be safer? Are these guys, is there much purpose to being the first person in quotation marks on Jordan Clark or me being on Orazio Fantasia? Is there premise to saying, you know what, let's actually see how the unproven players start, let's start safer, and if they become a must-have, those guys aren't great examples because I don't think they were ever going to be premiums, but if they do become must-haves, then we can just adopt that and jump on the bandwagon with the current owners.
You're not going to like my answer to this one, JB, but I think it depends on the year, and I say that because typically if you were to start somebody and let's say they go really well, if that year there's like surprise rookies or surprise premiums where, you know, the end of round two, you're like, oh, I need to prioritize these other players and people miss out on your POD that's gone well, then you get a massive benefit because they just like physically can't jump on. But if you've nailed everything and it's a boring, straightforward year and people have a luxury trade to make at the end of round three, well, then there was no point in starting him because everyone's just going to jump on, you know, at the end of round two anyway, something like a Tex where most people are able to jump in. I think it might be a little bit different during the season because prices rise immediately. So in round eight, I traded in Hall at 4.15, which was probably one of the first people to jump on Hall. It was the week before everyone else got him. And I don't think I gained much from him. I gained a 100-plus score, and everyone bought him for like 4.19 the next week. And yeah, then we all had Hall. And like he was fantastic, and it was awesome. But like, did I really gain anything by going a week early? Probably not. And you know what? I reckon it hurt me because a lot of people double downgraded that week, and they got RCD. And then in round nine, I had to choose between two of three of Burns, Poulter, and RCD. But people had already gotten RCD, and it was just a, I didn't feel like my team necessarily gained by going early on him. So I think, yeah, it depends on the season and at which place in the season. But I definitely think as much as lessons learned, looking at the teams that all finished at the top, there's not a POD in sight. Like everyone picked stock standard teams, and the teams that rose to the top were the teams that traded really well throughout the season. It didn't come down to like one specific player. It didn't come down to anyone starting Tex or something like, you know, ridiculous or crazy. So I think it just goes to show, you know, if you nail your premiums and then you just trade well and get the right timing of your trades throughout the season, you know, that's going to win you the game.
That's the entire premise that we should be adopting, is that we would rather play safe and nail all our picks than be risky and get a 2-week head start on people for the sake of potentially falling way behind the back pack and just not being able to make up ground. So Zach Butters is another example that comes to my mind is when I think about having started him this year, I did get a little bit of a bandwagon on him, but he was, for the most part, a point of difference. Through four rounds, he'd already had a score of 150 and should have had another. And even without the injury, he was still really affordable. I remember a lot of people talking about having the money to upgrade to Zach Butters. He was about 500K. He was going to be about 515K. And I just would have gotten his points, about 100 average after 4 weeks. He would have been a successful starting pick. But if he averaged 70 for me, I don't know if I would have been able to get off of him. And I would have just been a sinking ship, whereas everyone else who didn't start him is obviously floating to the top. So even with a successful point of difference pick that I made, I still don't think after a month I was better off than if I had just played safe and traded him in if he did look good, sort of thing. Does that make sense?
It's a bit upsetting to hear. I think people are trying to, you know, you want to pick that exciting pick and you want to have a bit of fun and a bit of flair. But like in terms of our aim, which is to win Supercoach, if that's your aim, then you can just play more, you know, we'll call it the template, and maybe it's a bit boring for you personally, but everyone has different goals. Some people want to win their league. Some people just want to have fun. And if you want to have fun, you know, trade in whoever you want. Pick your peers. Pick your favorite players. It doesn't matter. But for our specific purpose of trying to win Supercoach, then yeah, I agree with everything you're saying.
The one thing that I would kind of jump in just to, like, I guess, pile on your comment, but kind of solidify it from a different way, is that going into the season, we're looking for quote-unquote reliability of outcome. If you're taking, I talk about it as your risk profile, if you're taking in 5, 6, 7 of these guys that could swing massively in every direction, as opposed to, you know, someone like a McRae that just hits 120 every week, you're less likely to have a reliable outcome. It's really unlikely that all 7 of those are going to hit the positive swing right from the word go.
It becomes volatile.
And so I get, even in the postseason, when we've been posting some comments and stuff and some of the podcast, I saw a comment sent to M that was just like, oh, what did you do? You know, generally asking, what did you do in the preseason? How did you do it? And then, you know, just picked the right players, the no-brainers. And then the comment was like, oh, you're just a sheep following the crowd. And I'm like, she won. She literally won. I don't understand that comment that's like, oh, you've just got a template. Oh, you're sheep just following the crowd. You know, the reliability of outcome.
It's a winning formula.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? Like, we're not looking to win it in week one. It's like what I always say. You can't win it in week one, but you can definitely lose it. And you can put yourself in a situation you can't dig yourself out of. So I think one of the things that I took away, one of your comments before, Pistol, was the 22 games per year is so massive. We talk about it every year, but until you actually commit to doing it, and I look at my starting side and I'm like, there is not a single injury risk player here in terms of premiums. The one that jumps out at me, Zeeble and Impey, but they're 200K or 250K. Yeah. They're not big risks.
Dunkley could be getting into that territory, but
he could be.
Another thing.
He could be, but at the time,
yeah, absolutely.
We're looking for reliability of outcome, which is let's take the really low risk, good safe selections, a few like mostly guns and rookies with the occasional, really cheap mid-pricer on the low end of mid-pricer, and just let that cash generate to start the year because it's going to be a low variability team. And I just hate this comment, oh, you're just a sheep or you're just, you know, following the crowd. And unless the crowd, which, let's be honest, is mostly people that take this really too seriously and just focus all about our rank every year for 3 months in the preseason, usually the crowd is decently on the right track.
Yeah, and I mean, can I just say, M did start Zach Butters. That's a good selection.
And it's all about the rest of your side. Having Zach Butters in your 22 doesn't do anything if the rest, your other 21 players are just terrible.
Exactly. And I don't think it was. I didn't at the time think it was a low percentage pick. I still don't think it was, and I'm happy to have taken that risk. And as you said, Pistol, it is better to be boring and better to be template and nail your picks. And as Chizo said, it lowers the volatility of your entire squad. You're going to have more successful weeks than unsuccessful because other teams are too risky and they're going through the ups and downs of the roller coasters of all the risky guys. But having a person in there that you do trust, although they do seem risky to the, you know, the majority of people, as long as you can still back up that research, I don't think it's detrimental to start someone that you have faith in, like this year was for Zach Butters. But at the end of the day, it's just risk. It's all risk and risk profile. And yeah, Chizo, you'll preach that till the cows come home.
Yeah, JB, I think just to reinforce, I'm talking specifically about premium choices. Because I think like if you want to pick like a 200K...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
POD,
yeah.
You know, go for it. It's such like, a low
like
risk
Orazio.
Play.
Yeah, absolutely. Low risk. Okay, I agree. So if we talk more about trades over the course of the season, I assume you two had some pearlers and I had the opposite, considering I started well and got bad and you guys started fine and got really good. What if you sort of reassess your trades and maybe consider your frame of mind at the time and how you processed these into maybe I should do this, and then the process that got you all the way into, yep, this is a good trade, I'm going to do it. What jumps out of the page, Pistol, when you first look at your trades for the 2021, and things that you can do better and things that you've done immaculately that maybe you improved from last year?
All right, long answer coming up, but looking at my trades, I think my first 6 weeks and the first trade of my round 7, I nailed everything. I think that obviously helped improving my rank quite quickly because I started at 33K and, you know, found myself in the top 1K by round 5. In round 2, I traded out Dangerfield for Walsh, which was basically a reversal of what I had in the preseason. I really wanted Walsh, and he looked really good, and I was like regretting not starting him. So it was just a swift reversal of that one. In round 3, I copped a lot of heat on trading out Josh Kelly for Clayton Oliver. And I mean, that was going into a De Boer tag, so probably not ideal timing. However, I just wanted to ensure that I had the flexibility of trades in the coming week in case I copped injuries. It didn't happen, but I'm still happy with making that transfer at that time because, I mean, we saw how Kelly basically went, we saw how Oliver went, and that's kind of what we predicted. You know, at the time, my rationale was, I don't think Kelly's going to be playing 22 games anymore. He's been playing off the half forward and he looks like half injured. Oliver's going to play every game. I'm just going to cut the cord now and, you know, hope for the best. So that one was quite good. And I made another sideways trade, a lot of them early, but it seemed to set up my team for success. I just cut all the dead weight. I cut Caleb Daniel in round 5. I traded him straight to Tom Mitchell. I did have Bontempelli as an option there, so it could have gone differently, but
better,
Mitchell...
Yeah.
Obviously came home really strong. I did pay 578K, so I didn't even get a massive discount given he dropped to low 500s. But just getting another player that would play every round with solid scores felt like another good decision.
I'm feeling a real theme here for both of you, actually.
in round 7, when Dunkley went out, I think was a defining trade for most of the top 100. A lot of people, myself included, went straight to Zorko at his lowest price, I think it was, at 485K. And that was from our discussions about how many clangers he was having and free kicks he was giving away, and he was passing on the eye test and everything. So it was a straightforward one there. And unfortunately, my other trade, it was a toss-up. I was having the conversation with you, should I get Houston, JB, or should I get Callum Mills?
I assume I recommended Callum Mills.
There was 20K difference in price. Honestly, what swayed me at that time was the buys. I was looking at my buy structure. I thought, I can't take someone with a round 14 buy, and went with Houston, and we know how that panned out, and it was awful. But, you know, I guess Houston played every game, so it kind of worked out, and Mills didn't. No, it was just a bad decision. Fortunately, the next round was the Hall pick, which did work out very well. So
if you were to just pause and just The thing, like, you've obviously made great trades here, and listening and looking at my own trades is making me a little bit depressed, because it's obviously followed my own heart and not your advice, which is spectacularly combusted in my face. But if you can just assess, like, what are you doing right with it? Like, why are you making these good moves? Like, where are they coming from? Because I played the very same game as you, and looking at my trades, I, for some reason, had it in my head this year that I needed the best guys, like ASAP. So I got Jack Steele in at 650K. I got Dustin Martin in at 520K. These guys, I mean, Jack Steele came down in price and then obviously finished the season great. I'm not saying he's a failed pick. Tom Mitchell at 610K. I barely made a dollar on my trades. And then before I knew it, I was having to trade in Stephen May because I didn't have money, Aaron Hall because I didn't have money. All these guys, like Isaac Heaney, to try and make some money. I had to go budget so fast because I was just trading in the guys who I thought were essential, like Jack Steele. And for some reason, in my mind, every single time I traded someone in, it was they've just scored really well and I can't see them scoring poorly again. And that's not really ever the case. People just go up and down in price unless you're Jack McRae, who I think will be in our teams for the rest of his career. But what got you to get these guys? Because it seems like you're ignoring the in-form player for the guy who's just good value. Is that as simple as it is?
Yeah, a lot of the time, I like picking Walsh, for example, after round, like he wasn't the highest scorer in round one, but you know, he was 543K. I went for players that I thought were not overpriced. Like, I purposely avoided Steele at 650 because I thought he would come down. I did pick up Steele for 560K in round 11. A lot of my first half of the season trades were not paying full price for people. I actually, looking through my whole thing, only once, twice, which includes Grundy, because I traded out Grundy, did I pay over 600K for a player, and the other was Lions during the bye. So I always went value for pretty much the entire season, but a lot of the time, to be honest, as long as there was a case where you could use stats and the eye test and merge them, and basically looking at Zorko and finding the reasons why he wasn't scoring well, and looking at him, I'm like, this guy's going to explode, it's going to be really good. Being able to jump on those players the same way that I saw Hall playing off the halfback, I'm like, he's going to score really well. Like, I'm watching him play off the halfback. It's bruise free. He's going to get a lot of the ball. Because I watched so much football, it allowed me to ignore the price next to everyone's name and just think, which of the players do I think from this point onwards, forget what they've done, but from this point onwards, based on what role and how they're currently looking, do I think that they will be the highest scorer for me for the rest of the season? So that includes Tom Mitchell. I ignored his first, I think he was not very good for the first 4 weeks.
It was good round one, I can tell you that, because that's when I got him.
So I ignored him even though he wasn't, I picked him up even though he wasn't burning the house down. I just was like, he's going to play 22 games, he's building, he was starting to look better in the eye. I thought he didn't look super good in rounds 2 and 3. And then round 4, I was like, okay, there's a bit of an uptick here. And then I picked on him. I don't think for most of the time I even looked at the prices of players. I just thought, these are the players that are going to do really well on the way home. Kept that the whole way through.
Help me out, Chizo. You don't watch as much football as Pistol. And I mean, I watch all 9 games. And you finished 8th. How did you process your trades in this matter? Because, like I said, I got sucked into the guys who were overpriced. And like, to me, in my mind, I got Jack Steele at 653K.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
I thought, this guy's going to be 700K for the next 2 months, and no one's going to be able to get him in. I want that guy. How did you resist guys like that and get the budget guys with the faith that they would eventually drop? Or did you just say, well, even if they don't drop, I'm not getting sucked into that? What was your thought process without watching every single game of football and seeing it for yourself?
It's going to be along the same lines. Like, I definitely agree with everything that Pistol's saying, and that when I tell you some of these trades are going to blow your mind. But basically, the first round, I was ranked 32,000 after round one. And then in round two, I had a round rank of 58, and I was into the top 1,500. After round three, I was in the top 1,000, and I didn't go outside that for the rest of the year. So I was supremely confident that I had a really good starting structure, and that I didn't need to rush anything. I didn't need to be the guys that were sidewaysing a few guys to just kind of fix up the errors that they started the season with. It just kind of gave me a little bit of calm in terms of not wanting to rush my trade. So in previous years, I've burnt 3, 4, 5, 6 trades heading into upgrade season. Whereas this year, my first upgrade, I had in round two, Dangerfield to Titch for injury. Round four, I went Cozzy to Chapman, which in hindsight wasn't an amazing trade.
I did the same move.
And in round five, I went Tanner Bruin to Alec Waterman. And so round six, I did Chad Warner to Finlay McRae. And I traded out Jordan Clark for my first upgrade, which is in defence. And this is going to blow your mind, JB. Who do you reckon was my first upgrade in the team that came in the top 10 this year? Who do you reckon my first upgrade was in defence for Jordan Clark?
I mean, I don't know who you started, but my mind goes immediately to Dan Houston, of course.
Yeah.
Maybe not. Maybe Jaden Short.
My first upgrade was Sam Doherty.
When, I remember that now that you mention it.
And it stands out like a sore thumb looking at it. And in round seven, I went Goulden to Steel Sidebottom. Which, again, you're probably thinking, what is this guy? God. He finished eighth. But what I was doing is, in terms of my trades, I was doing for two things. So if you remember round six, round seven, we were actually having a lot of like a big dip in confidence when it came to our rookies. And I forget the specifics, but the reason that I brought in Sam Doherty is because I needed to bring in a defender that week, and it needed to be from a particular buy. And so I'm thinking of all the teams that I could be bringing in from that particular buy, and who had the later game, so I could protect from, I could find out whether we were going to have a donut or not, if they were going to be in the final Sunday squads and things like that. And as an upgrade, he's just turned out to be offering some decent value at that particular point in time. And so it became about me not trying to force the issue and try and chase someone and try and get someone in. It became, what does my team need right now? Who is presenting good value? And how can I protect myself from downside risk, which is if I trade the player I want in early, what could go wrong in the other games this weekend that I can't protect myself from? And so there were a couple occasions where I waited longer than I needed to. In hindsight, I could have picked someone else and I would have been fine because no one was a laid out. But there were instances. I think I was on the phone to you, Pistol, and we were like looking at this from every angle, and it was just like one of these things where we went, the numbers are saying pick Doherty. That's I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, no, it's same as Steel Sidebottom. There was no, at your price range, at your point, you were like, there's no other option that makes sense for me right now except for Sidebottom. And I was like, this is rough because it wasn't like we were super sold on Sidebottom, but that's what your team needed and you filled a hole. But the funny part about it is those positions that you got, a defender and a forward, like it ends up being more of a pivot point instead that you could use throughout the buys to kind of catapult yourself through the buys even further, because you're able, I guess, to jump off them and get in some really sharp selections. So they end up just being like temporary placeholders in your side almost.
Yeah, exactly right. So in hindsight, you brought in Hall in round 7. I remember you trying to sell me on him. And he was coming back from, I forget what injury he had. I think maybe it was a concussion. He had a 30. And I was just very steadfast. I'm a low risk. I'm just taking the tried and true premiums that have gone 100 before and will go 100 again. And in hindsight, if I get Hall in round 7 instead of round 10, he was my third upgrade. I'd only done 3 upgrades by round 10. If I'd got him instead of Sidebottom in round 7, that's a whole chunk of points over the course of the year that I would have been far better off. So I wouldn't necessarily call it a failed pick. It's what my team needed at that point, which was to get a forward off field and to bring in someone that was decently reliable and also fitted into my buy structure. But when you're looking at these, looking at the overall impression I'm getting from my trades is that I only had one guy that I brought in over 600K, which was Jared Lyons in round 14 for 613. I think that was similar with you, Pistol.
Yep,
and I kind of picked the eyes out of everyone that was displaying me some value. I'm looking at Hall. I picked him up at 454. Steele at 563. Walsh at 460. Let's say 460, 560. Kelly at 560. And another one in round 14, I picked Kyle Langford for 475. Again, just because based on the role he was playing, the numbers were dictating that in round 14, I needed to plug another forward gap, and he just happened to be the one that fitted the buy structure because Dusty had been moved. So I couldn't get Dusty, who I had intended on getting. And he was just the next option. And instead of sitting on my hands and saying, I don't like him, I don't want him, I'm going to wait an extra week, I accepted that there was an opportunity cost by playing another rookie on field when I could have another premium score, and just sucked it up. It's not like I wanted him. It's just what the numbers dictated.
Yeah, so the way you guys both explain it there, I think is, I've got a notepad here. I'm actually taking notes as you speak. The picks and the trades should more so feel right to your team and your structure and mostly your price point. Mm. And sometimes instead of getting Jack Steele for 650K, there is another person. Like at that point that I got Jack Steele, I still needed Walsh in my team. I got him 2 weeks after that for 580K.
Yeah.
So there are just... there are more logical options that sort of present themselves to you, and you just have to be willing to look at those huge guns that are scoring well, looking at your rank and saying, I'm actually doing pretty well here. I don't need this guy at this price. I need the guy who's going to be reliable, and I'm going to look back at in 10 weeks' time and say, I can't believe I got this guy at this price.
Yeah.
I don't think it often works out where you get someone in the first couple of months in the season or month and a half at a huge price, and you look back at it and say, wow, that was their lowest price. Like, I don't know what I was thinking. Jack Steele, 653K. Did I genuinely think that was going to be his low mark for the season?
Mm.
Like, I can't have. So yeah. I think there are lessons to be learned for a lot of coaches that are a little bit too hasty and wanting to get to round 21 before round 5 and get all the good guys and... you know, have these premiums that no one else has, and you know, sort of just appease that FOMO that you might be having watching these guys score big every week, and just wait out the value options and wait for these guys that you've already assessed and said they're a good trading option, but not this week, and wait them out to get to an appropriate price and say, all right, now that person who I saw him at the start of the season, thought he was going to be a good player, thought I was going to trade him in then, I've waited, now he's a available to me again at a cheaper price. Now I pull the trigger. Timing, I think, can't be underrated in this game. You guys both got Hall early. I believe you both got Zorko early. And these are the types of players that separated you two from me.
Again, they were obvious selections, though. Like they weren't unique where you needed some specific insight.
Correct.
But you just followed what's screaming at us right now. What is the player that if you peel that one layer back and go, wow, he's averaging 6 free kicks against a game. Wow, that's not going to go for the rest of the year. He's actually undervalued right now. Let's get on as soon as we can.
Exactly.
And I think some people picked Dusty that round.
I did.
Yeah, in that round at a much higher price because...
What round?
As you said, like around round 6-7.
I got him at 6 and he got concussed that week.
Yeah, it's because you see the name Dusty. I mean, the price is still good above 500, but...
At that point, though, if you remember, he'd had the big game against Carlton. He had a few 80s in a row and then a 90. And these were like 30 disposal games and a goal.
Mm.
And it was like, or 30 disposals and 2 behinds. And you're like, if he kicks goals there and used the ball a little bit better, like he's punishing me. So as much as I think the steal selection for me was shocking, especially with Walsh available and other selections in the season were bad, Dustin Martin, I think, was more luck-based, and that's going to happen as well. The game does have a large luck element to it, and you know that could have been Dane Zorko that week, but I had the money for Dustin Martin, and that's who it became, and it turned out to be the wrong decision, but... There is a world where Zorko gets suspended for a month and Dusty averages just 95 for the rest of the season and it's fine. But that's the way it goes.
For you, I think you need to be able to identify that, hey, if Zorko and Dusty are going to average roughly the same for the rest of the season and Zorko's cheaper, like that's kind of... I think we look at the price and think higher is better. I think that's a natural instinct.
Yeah, no, that is true.
So 100%. I think it's like when you see Zorko and Dusty's a better player in real life and Dusty's a higher price, I'm thinking, well, Dusty's better for Supercoach, but it just isn't always like that. Mm.
I guess there's one last kind of comment. I don't know if we've got any questions on the buyers, JB, specifically.
No, go for it.
Well, this is another comment that I get all the time, and people are going to have very strong opinions about it, but one of the things that I've taken away from Supercoach data, Nico, this year, was when he was putting up, you know, what the top so many rankings would have been from X week onwards. And I think I was ranked 2nd overall from the beginning of the buys to the end of the year. And I get that that's not technically a representative sample of everyone that had, you know, that they to be ranked like that, they must have had a good buys. But what it tells me, in some way, my meticulous planning that I do for the buys in the preseason, making my starting side, and then in regards to my trades in the middle of the year, there is a positive influence that comes from that. There are people that are just going to get lucky, but by leaving it up to luck, you also leave yourself another downside risk. So in terms of the buys this year, I was set up so perfectly that even when the fixtures changed, I had no risk. Apart from rookies getting dropped, etc., out of the 18 remaining, that I was going to have a significant donut. And so when we got those extra 2 trades, I was already set up. And so what that allowed me to do was sideways one of these premiums that ordinarily would have been playing, but now it's changed. So in round 14, I actually, when everyone was really struggling, I actually traded Jaden Short out to get an extra premium in. It allowed me to bring in Langford and Lyons. And then the 2 weeks later, Doherty got injured and I've got an extra trade sitting there that, you know, is just extra up my sleeve. I'm thinking to myself, now, who were the best options? And it just turned out that of the options that I had that week, I think I was picking between your boy, JB, Christian Salim, Dan Houston and Jaden Short. And Jaden Short was the best option in my eyes. And so I had no qualms with bringing him in only a fortnight after I'd gotten rid of him. And I wouldn't have been able to do that and be in that situation if I hadn't planned for the buys. I'm very much a perfectionist, so I definitely spent way more time than the average person would have, even if they were planning on them. But I wouldn't have been in that situation. You know, I forget what the saying is, prior planning, whatever. It's when success is like when prior planning meets opportunity or something.
Life
like
is
that.
Like a box of chocolates. Is that what you're going for?
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like if I hadn't have done the legwork to be in that position, I would have been using those trades to cover donuts rather than getting a 19th and a 20th score into that round. And you know, just helping propel myself towards. And in round 14, I had a round rank of 580. So, and that's the one where I jumped from 200th to 70th. You know, so I appreciate those that don't worry too much about the buyers, but use it to inform their trades during the year. But if you get to round, you know, I only did 3 upgrades in round 10. How much influence are those buyers going to have on those 3 upgrades that you can do in the first 2.5 months of football if you're so heavily in one side? You might miss out on Zorko presenting really good value because you've already got so many of his buyers. You know what I mean? So I just think it's important to say that, you know, I don't think planning is ever going to result in consistently negative results if you're really putting time into it.
Yeah, no, I get what you mean. It's going to, the more time you put in and the more investment you make into the game and to preparing, I think if it goes wrong for you this year, for example, if you planned meticulously and you traded in Dustin Martin before a concussion and you did all these other things that, like, you planned well for the buys, but the buys moving actually did impact you negatively or whatever happened, and you got unlucky, that's not going to be the formula for you forever, or even that's not even likely to be the formula for you again. I think planning it more times than not, obviously luck is just a huge factor in this game, we can't help that, is going to result in good results throughout the season. And as you've just said, I never used to plan for the buyers, and ever since I have, I struggle to finish outside the top 2,000. Even in this year where I thought I traded awfully and got saved by good captaincy scores and pretty much a good starting team, I still didn't fall outside the top 2,000 because I did so much planning. And it's sort of foolproofs you a little bit, doesn't it? It just makes your safety net so much higher.
If you don't mind, though, quickly, just as a different buy experience, because I had almost the opposite experience of Chizo.
Yeah.
I planned, but everything went wrong.
Yeah.
Like, my round, I panicked. I got into the buys, and a lot of my rookies weren't named. I thought I was going to have like 21 every week, and I turn up the first week and I'm looking at 17, and then I'm looking at my next week and I'm like, I think I'm going to have, you know, 17, 19, 16 or 15 or something. And it led to, instead of looking at my, so I know what I did. I had a plan, and I saw what Chizo did. And that's the thing that impressed me with Chizo's plan, was it was so well laid out and structured that when something happened, he was easily able to look at his plan and adapt. I threw my plan out the window. As soon as I hit the first hurdle, I just deleted it and then didn't come back to it.
You are a bit of a panicker.
My trades in round 13 spiraled I still did well, but I traded in Josh Kelly, Jai Newcomb, and Zach Smith. I think I made 4 good trades out of my last 12 I'm looking at. Literally Smith. 4 out of my last 12, I would say, were positively impacted my team, which means I made 8 bad trades of my last 12. And that all stemmed from the buy panic and me being, I'm going to miss, you know, what I should have probably done in hindsight was perhaps I should have just copped a donut and not traded in one of those players.
Zach Smith.
I mean, maybe not. Honestly, Zach Smith wasn't my worst trade there.
Come
because
on, Pistol. I've admitted Arazio and Houston. It's time to let Zach Smith go, I think.
No, as in, I made other worst trades. That's
he brought in Rockliffe again. He didn't tell us about it.
I mean, I brought in Josh Kelly.
He was good.
Yeah,
he was good.
He was okay. I don't think it was like a fantastic trade. But the panic that set in just meant that I threw out, at the first sign of struggle, I threw out my plan. I think what I would learn, and it's funny because Chizo was doing it and I just didn't copy him, was I should have been like, no, here's my plan. Why didn't I stick to what I was going to do and just make like subtle amendments to try and navigate through it? Yeah, sure.
That kind of also still backs us up because you plan your starting team and your trades in the first half of the season with the buys in mind, and your safety net, as we saw with your ranking in the 90s, was still very good. And even when things did go wrong and your actual buy plan got thrown out the window, the planning that you put into the season already to that point was
carried me.
Still enough of a saving grace to take you through to your really good rank. And that's kind of what we're like, the whole gist of it is, if you put that work in, then the worst case scenario isn't as bad, even if everything does go wrong, as someone who's not planning and then things go wrong. Because they're you know, I saw so many people highly ranked this year on Twitter and in our Patreon as well, who just didn't plan and ended up with a round with 12 players on their field and ranked 5,000 for the year. And like, it's still a great year, and I'm not trying to put anyone down here, but it just goes to show that the planning that you put in, even if things do go wrong, just gives you such a good safety net. I do want to pivot. I want to talk about one more thing before we get into a little bit of 2022 discussion. I think we talk about this every year at the end of the year, and it's captaincy choices. Now, Nico punched the data, Supercoach data punched the data for us. I think I had the highest captaincy points for the year, and I think that went a long way to me holding on to a half decent rank. Mm-hmm. Pistol, you struggle every year. What's going on, mate? How are you not taking your cue as someone who's not good at picking captains and maybe just pivoting to another bit of tactics?
No, I was terrible in 2019. In 2020, I averaged over 140 points per captain. So it was incredibly successful. And then this year, again, it just fell through the floor. And I think what it was for me was I didn't adapt. Like, I didn't take it as, this is season 2021. There's all this new information. There's all this new data. Instead, I just thought, hey, Gorn and Grundy are good. And I captained them so many times throughout like the first 10 rounds. And I didn't jump on midfielders that were scoring well. And I was so slow to pick up on it compared to other people. So I kept making the same mistakes. And not just that, then in the back half of the year, when we saw some players, I guess there was some players that had a bit more higher volatility and there was some sub 100 scores, I didn't adapt either. And I kept risking it when players were going like 120-ish. Instead of taking the safety, I would still roll the dice. And I had players like Steele, and I never captained Steele for the entire season, I don't think. So it was
the most informed player in the last 13 weeks of the year. No, did I just not get a captaincy armband from you.
I'm pretty sure I still put it on Grundy after I brought him back in. Like, I was so slow, and I captained McRae like most of the rounds, from like, I think round 17 onwards. But that's incredibly slow to pick up on. Midfielders.
I think it's important as the person who historically makes the best vice captain and captaincy decisions. I'm speaking to both of you and to everyone listening to the podcast. Obviously, someone like Jackson McRae should be in every combination of your vice captaincy and captaincy. If you notice that someone is scoring consistently 110 plus and never going below 100, they should be somewhere in your plans most weeks, unless something is identified as, like, Jack Steele and McRae. I think were my vice captaincy combination for 5 out of the last 6 weeks, and every single week I banked a 130 plus with those two guys. When you recognize things like that, players that are in purple patches, players who have soft matchups, and players who just score well regardless of who they're playing, I think it gets to a time, especially if you've failed a couple of captaincies, to just take a McRae. And everyone has that negative stigma. It's like, oh, he might score between 100 and 115. And it's like, well, sometimes that's actually okay, depending on how the round's going. And sometimes it's also fine because you can see Jack Steele has, you know, Collingwood later in the week. So, you know, you can roll the dice on a 110.
Had to pick Collingwood.
They were a soft kill for midfields this year. I don't know. I think I play a safer captaincy game than you, or maybe you're just a little slower on the uptake, which, considering all your fantasy ability, it's probably your only flaw. So I don't want to sound like I'm insulting you here, but...
No, I did badly in it. I can admit it.
I don't know if I'm safer or if you're... Yeah, just slower to jump on the guys who are like hot in form. But I think it's definitely something to look at for next year. Now, Chizo, I saved you for last year. Mm. I know you've got a lot to say on the captaincy conundrums. So what was your sort of, I guess, motto for this year and your captaincies?
My kind of motto is very... along the same lines of Pistol. I've got to say, like, a lot of these things,
that's bad.
I'm listening...
You did the best, JB.
I'm listening to, like, all opinions, and my motto this year was, let's just play the no-brainers, the safe options, and take low risks. And so, if we're looking at the data, I hit my VC 61% of the time, and I had my captain's score being the highest... score on my team 83% of the time. I think that's what that means. Nico, correct me if I'm wrong. But I only had two clangers for the year. Clangers being defined where I've turned down a VC score and taken a captaincy score that was less. So in round four, I turned down Ridley's 124 and got a 92 from Grundy. And then in round eight, I turned down 128 from Grundy and got a 112 from Gorn. They're the only two times.
You turned down a 128, you crazy person.
It's just one of those situations where... you kind of
We all thought Gorm was going to go mammoth.
Yeah, exactly. And you just get sucked in. And probably the realization that from those two clangers, let's say, in terms of our captaincy points, I only lost 48 points for the year. You know what I mean? So if you've got McRae going 130 and someone gets a 160 from Jack Steele, you're not really missing that much.
No, you're not.
You know, and so we can get sucked into chasing... an extra 25 points or extra 30 points, and then you end up with Grundy, Gorn, Walsh doing a sub 80 or a sub ton, and you're just like, I had 120 just sitting there. And I always go on these podcasts and say, you know, in DMs and people contact me, I say 120 plus, just take it, take the safe option. And there was two times in the first eight rounds I got bitten by it, and then I didn't make another clanger for the remainder of the year. There was even one instance where I think I took a 119 from Jared Lyons, and in my mind I was like, I'm learning from my previous mistakes, and what's 1 point in terms of that arbitrary line that I draw for myself? Some people draw 125, some people use the average of the player that they're considering captaining. And I think in terms of captaincy going forward, I think what I'm going to try and do, and particularly talking to a lot of the guys that finish top 100 and stuff like that in Slack, I'm probably going to aim for someone that I think is a really safe 120. If I get a 120, I'm just going to lock it in. If someone goes 160 on my side, great. I've got those 160 points. I just didn't happen to captain them. And, you know, if I'm looking at someone, looking at the options to be a C, if I didn't get that 120, I'm looking at their average and who they're playing and really kind of trying to assess whether it's a smart move to try and, you know, take that score. So if I've got a 115 or, say, a 119 from Lions, which is what I had in round 15, I was looking around the rest of my side going, I don't really have anyone I'm super confident is going to go 150, 160. There might be a couple 130s there. What's the point? Let's just lock in 119. I think that's kind of the option that I'm going to go with further. Is that sort of... have I explained that well enough for you?
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think there's a stigma around captaincy where people are giving up the opportunity at a huge captaincy score by taking and quote-unquote settling for a VC score. But for all those guys who... get the big 150 or the 160, a lot of the competition gambles on the wrong person. It doesn't get a 150 or a 160, but they get an 80 or a 90. Mm. It's just the stigma on a 115 to 120 plus and the sort of holy grail of getting a 130, 140 plus is so wrong, I think, in a lot of coaches' minds. And I got sucked into it a couple of times as well. I don't think I turned down a single 120 plus for the entire season.
Yeah.
But there was a time, where I took a 115. There was another time where I turned down, I think it was 118 from Gorn and rolled the dice on, no, it was 118 from someone and rolled the dice on Gorn who scored 101. And I still said, you know, that was the high percentage play for me. I thought there was a, you know, 80% chance he went higher, but I kind of got lucky. He could have gone so much lower. And it's just points in the bank. Rolling, like, you've got something in your hand. Someone's already given you something, and you're deciding to play the lottery with it and throw it back in and say, no, I want something more. And that something more, there's a million reasons why it could be less. Like, I think it's just so risky to play that game. And 120, I know Pistol talks about this a lot, and some years it should be a higher cap than 120. I don't think I'll ever turn down a 120 plus, ever, no matter what captaincies are coming through later on in that round. Am I being crazy, Pistol?
Yeah, I just don't. But you're making a fair point. It's just more like last season, I know it was probably an outlier, but when you had Gorn averaging 139 as an average.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm not going to take a 120 that year. And, you know, I was able to average 140 with my captaincy scores because between him and Neil playing every game, Neil averaging 134 himself, like, it was pretty easy to get a 130 plus captaincy.
Yeah, you just played
score.
Those two, which is great. And you're playing two guys who went 130 plus on average, so yeah. You are actually going to get, you are going to get a 140 plus, like, throughout the season. The reason, the way you stuff that 140 plus up is if you get an 80 or a 70 in there, and that sort of derails your 140 plus average for the season. I think that's more likely if you keep on risking 120s than it is, obviously, if you just accept the odd 120 and then let the 150s carry you up to a 140 rather than just trying to hit 140 plus every single week. Let the variance take you there as opposed to continually trying to hit that high number, even in a good season.
Mm. Yeah, I think it should be as simple as VC and C, your two best players in your side, like every week. That might even be the lesson, because we were doing that with Gorn and Neil, and this year if you did McRae and Steele, you probably absolutely nailed it, and they were the two highest scoring players, and I just never did that.
Yeah.
Mm. I think there's always a lot to be learned about captain season, a lot to be discussed next season. I think I'm going to move on to the final little segment here. Playful little thing that we do and look onto 2022 and just briefly, I mean, we're getting more and more information as the years go on, aren't we? So Bryce Mitchell, excellent, excellent Twitter person is Bryce, in our Patreon as well, has been feeding a lot of potential prices of players through as their seasons finish up. So we've got a lot of information on what price players might be looking at. I don't know about you guys, but I've already got, like, the basis, the skeleton of a team set up inside my own head of what I'm going for. So sometimes we get too much information and I can't get my mind out of this game, but at the same time, Bryce is an amazing account, so make sure you go give him a follow. But I think 2022 has a lot of excitement to it, and every single season we do a segment called Slap Me If I Don't Start. And just to run through how we've gone thus far, in 2019, Pistol, you said slap me if I don't start Clayton Oliver. And in 2020, you didn't start him.
And I didn't start him in 2021.
I don't want to hear more.
You deserved two slaps because you then didn't learn and didn't start him again. And I think he was very successful each of those seasons. Now, 2020, you said slap me if I don't start Matt Rowe. You did put a slight disclaimer on it saying if he's priced at 445.
Yes.
And he was priced at 490. It's 45K difference, mate. I'm still going to slap you for that one.
Come on.
Chizo, I did force you to be creative and I maybe pressured you into McCluggage in 2019, who you didn't start. 2020, your shout was Andy Brayshaw, which I think for a lot of the season...
No, it wasn't. Was it?
It was Andy Brayshaw.
It definitely was Andy Brayshaw.
What? Did you force me into that one as well? Did I have to pick like a...
No. I actually told you to go safe on that one.
Did I say when you said Andy Brayshaw?
I believe I heard you say at least choose someone like Darcy Parrish who you love.
Exactly.
Which would have been a better starting pick if you ask me. But anyway, you didn't start him. It was okay. He didn't have the best season anyway, Chizo. Now, my 2019 was slap me if I don't start Dan Houston. I'm a man of my word. I did start
you
him.
Did. And then
I followed up on that and started him this year as well, which maybe not great. I won't start him next year. I'm finally breaking that curse. And then I backed up with saying, slap me if I don't start Zach Williams this year. And, I mean, he was injured for round one. I mean, suspended for round one, so I couldn't start him, guys.
You would have, though, if he wasn't. He was bad, that's a thing.
He was so bad.
I would have started him, and he would have been fine. I think the suspension weighed on his mind the entire season.
Yeah, I'm not sure it works that way.
I mean, look, we'll never know, will we? All I know is I had an out. You guys didn't. And you're both 0 for 2. I'm 2 for 2, I'm saying. So... let's have a look at it for this season coming. And although I said to you pre-podcast that we're doing this segment and to think about it, I personally haven't thought about it, so I'm glad I go third. Pistol, I'm starting with you.
Alrighty. I'm wondering how unique I should go. I think this one might be good.
They can't be uber obvious. I'll be the judge, of course.
You can be the judge. I think it's a pretty good one. Slap me if I don't start Tuk Miller.
Oh!
Okay, I'll give you that.
I love that. That.
All right, I'm happy. I'm happy with that one. I'm feeling really confident.
Do you want to explain why?
No. I just... Look, he... in his run home, I think it was after round 7, he didn't go below 30 touches. Yeah. I think I've touched on how I want to start players that are going to be really consistent and not fall in price. I think Tuk Miller...
And play every game.
Was,
which Tuk Miller didn't.
Play every game. I mean, he got suspended, but that's fine.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, since round 6, he didn't sub ton. Like, his lowest score was 103, but he only had 2 scores that were below 115. So he should, hopefully, if he has a similar season, you know, not waver much in price. So it's really similar to a Jack McRae type. I don't see him falling away with, like, improvements from Raul or anything. I think that might make him even better. He is a workhorse. He runs, he tackles. He reminds me so much of Jack Steele. Like, he...
Yeah,
it's like watching the same thing. Except, I think
how old is he, Pistol? Because I think he's got a stigma of being a 48-year-old.
I actually don't know, but I'm pretty sure he's like 24.
He's 24, I think.
25.
He's unbelievably young.
He's young. He had a breakout, like a proper breakout season. This reminded me exactly like Jack Steele before. I'm very high on him next season, and just watching him play as well, he will seem like he's the type of guy. I mean, I remember from previous seasons, not just last season, he's the guy that never gives up. He doesn't drop his head. He's not going to like fade away just because the team is losing. He's not like one of those players that gets really demoralized. So even if Gold Coast gets smashed, he will be in every context, tackling, getting handballs, and just trying until the very end. To couple all those things, it's basically the perfect player that I want to start with in 2022.
Chizo.
Am I allowed to say Darcy Parrish?
You can.
Well,
I mean, no.
Yeah,
you can't say Darcy Parrish.
See, I thought this would be the thing.
It's too obvious.
I thought I'd like. Okay, look. I agree.
Wait. Chizo, if I give you Darcy Parrish, can I have Zach Butters?
Yes.
No.
Deal.
That's so ridiculous.
What do you mean?
It's going to be Zach discounted Butters? Price. No, I'm going to veto that.
Veto.
You both got to pick two different players.
No, Darcy Parrish then. Sorry, Chizo, I tried for you, mate.
Okay, I'm gonna do it.
Why does it sound like you went to the bathroom mid podcast?
Because this needs some building up.
Uh-oh. I'm scared.
The emergence of one player is gonna change the landscape of what we call the ruck line. I've fallen in love with him.
Oh no.
Having him in my side, being accidentally forced to pick him.
It's Jacob Edwards.
And I think he's going to be...
Tim English.
The prophecy has spoken that he's going to be the number one ruck in 2022. It's the fridge.
I mean...
Slap me if I don't start, obvious. Sure, Darcy.
The average 120, and you want that to be the your unique pick.
Yep. Well, I guarantee right. we turn around next year. Wait. And, oh, we've still got to go Pistol. Grundy and Gorn. Oh, he's too injury prone. I reckon it's a much more different story next year.
Wait, guys, can I just pause? Pistol's argument is he averaged 120.
No, he was in number
Tuk
one
Miller
rush.
Averaged 125, mate.
He's not an Uber the number premium. One mid. That's
what?
The
Dude, Darcy's
Darcy also not the number one ruck.
Oh, because last week, because Gorn went 160. Oh, that it's.
I think you'll find that Grundy was
both
fourth.
Gotten out of one.
I really wanted you to say like Aaron Hall or something. So
oh,
I'm
hell
a
no,
disappointed,
I'm not crazy.
But fair enough. I mean, you probably will pick him if he plays in the back. Anyway, go JB. Yeah,
no, I kind of I want to take Butters for the ridiculous. At least my guy played less than.
Hey,
paid no.
Your boy Grundy was fourth on both points and average. Nick Nat jumped him.
That's depressing.
What?
Literally jumped him.
The Grundy Gorn combo is done. It's all about the fridge.
All right. What about Jordan Dugowie? Can I make that my guy?
I think.
Or is he too obvious?
Does he lose DPP?
No,
I
surely
think
won't.
He's
a pretty obvious.
He played
selection.
A third of the season as a pure mid. It's got to be really close.
No, a third. That means he played 60 plus.
All right.
Percent
give me one of Butters or Dugowie. Right, can I say both? Can I double down on those two? Is that good enough?
Sure. Both of them. I honestly think.
How about you pick a defender, JB?
No, I've picked a defender every year.
That's
and
why
it's
I'm.
Never
that's why I'm
me.
Saying it. It's yeah.
No, you're... I need to pivot to the other side of the game. <All
right. laughs> He'll pick a forward that goes
it's not,
to
it's
play
not
defense
well for me. Mate, Zach Williams and Dan Houston. I'm 0-2 on picking good breakout contenders from defense.
Me too.
I mean, I can pick Hall if you want.
No, because I want him to be successful, and you don't pick successful players.
Exactly. So just leave me with Butters and Dugowie, who right. you like neither of.
Yeah, no, it's...
And we'll move on. All right. Okay. I owe you both a slap in the face, for starters. Can we just go around and slap each other? I don't get a slap, though.
The circle of slap.
Go. Ouch.
Oh, shit. Jeez. You put a bit of fist into that. That was less of a slap. more of an open palm, but okay. glad we shared that together, guys. All right. Well, that's me for the podcast. Do you guys want to discuss anything privately while I jump off? Or?
Yeah, no. I think Chizo said he's got a bit of a team. Oh, no, it was you, actually. Said you got a little bit of a team planned out.
In
Do you have
head.
Any
yeah.
super early thoughts on, like, players specifically?
Yeah, I like a lot of them. It's my early take.
Do you
like
give us
genuinely
a short list?
Butters, Dugowie,
yep.
Aaron Hall, obviously, as we've already mentioned. I think Jake Lloyd for his price is going to be good.
Wow, you and might get him for the first time.
Yeah. Dunkley, if he keeps his DPP, which he played a lot in the second half of the season, he's always interesting. I'm going to end up with too many players. Rowan Marshall, I think he's going to be unbelievable yep. value. And there are 100 midfielders. So McRae, Steele, Walsh.
Took.
Took Miller. And
Oliver.
This one guy that I'm forgetting.
Yeah, Oliver.
Oliver, Harish. Yeah. And then, you know, we've got James Sicily. No.
Neil.
James Sicily. Lockie Neal
yeah.
is the biggest
Lions.
Lock of 2022. No, I'm not Lions.
But that's what...
I know. It was one of the things that I learned is that I should have considered Lions, but I'm not going to do it again.
One of the things I learned was that I'm not going to do the thing that I learned. Bond. Did you say Bond?
Maybe,
did you say Titch?
No, I didn't say Bond. No, there are a lot of good guys next year. A lot of good guys.
I think
I'm excited.
To build onto your list, I think some of the only other primo, really, I think Jaden Short down back without Hooley. He's still
no, bad pick.
As poor as people like to think he was, he still went just a touch
bad.
Under 100 and without Hooley, still averaged 105. So I think he's got some upside still there. So I don't mind that
Houston?
One. But on the really cheap side, not Houston, on the really cheap side, I think there's some value to be had with Cam Rayner, Miller, potentially Gresham if he gets forward status, and Schoenberg. I've definitely got my eye on as well.
Jeez,
so
I thought I looked into it. I thought I looked into this. Pistols made a team.
I've actually made a team. Like, I'm not even kidding. I've got the notes open on my phone and planned out kind of which premiums I'm going to start and how many of them.
Have you done your buy planning yet?
No, not now. I'm waiting for the draft. You know, I'll have that the day after.
Maybe the fixturing as well. Probably help.
Yeah, maybe. You know that Collingwood and Melbourne are going to have their buy in the same round, so you can kind of work around it.
Chizo looks disgusting. Are we watching any footy this weekend? I swear this isn't another segue. Who do we think wins this weekend, please, before I let you both go? Do you know who's playing?
I don't. I mean...
Really?
I'm literally checking. I think Brisbane Geelong will win.
Geelong versus GWS and Brisbane versus Bulldogs.
I think I'll do Brisbane and Geelong because of Toby Green.
Yeah, same.
All right, that's going to age well when we listen to this next year to find the slap us in the face calls. All right, thanks guys for joining me. Does anyone want to do the wrap up or do you want me to do it?
No, you go for it.
Aw, it's like a rite of passage. All right, thanks for joining us. You can find all our Twitters at Cheezo with a Z underscore DRSC hashtag 8.
I think
right. Put in there now.
Woo!
Pistol at Pistol underscore DRSC. Myself, JB at JB at underscore DRSC. I can't even say my own handle. The main one is Dr. underscore SC. I remember I got that wrong that one time, Cheezo, and you put this edit in. That was like, and I've been embarrassed. I've made sure I've never got it wrong since. So I just want you to know that was one thing that I learned from like 2018. It still haunts me. So thanks everyone for listening. Make sure you jump into our Patreon. Sign up for 1 month. You'll have to pay the first month. And then the other two, I think, are free.
Three.
Is that the way it works, Cheezo?
Yeah, that's right. Well, top 45% of Patreon were top 1% in 2021. Just thought I'd throw that out there.
And no, Pistol, so you have to pay for the first month and then the next 2 months are free.
Yeah. If you're a new sign up.
You get October.
Yeah, if you're a new sign up.
I mean if you join tomorrow, you get October, November, December, right? Mm. So three.
That's it.
Maybe.
Well,
I mean,
actually,
you still have to pay for this September. Month.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Anyway, join the Patreon, it's free. We're doing a lot of stuff in there in regards to NBA.
$4.50, I should say the price.
Yeah, $4.50 for the next few months. And you get the start of Supercoach in December with a lot of tinkering and early days knowledge. So make sure you jump in there. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks, everyone, for the great season. Thank you to you two for the great season. The best season that we've had as a page and a collective, us three of us. So absolutely unbelievable work by everyone involved, the patrons and you guys. So appreciate everyone. Thanks very much for tuning in. We might have something before the end of the year. Otherwise, we'll talk to you guys regarding 2022.
The softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.